Hello, this is World Business Report from the BBC World Service, where we bring you the latest in money, marketing, manufacturing, and yes, much, much more. Please review us, rate us, share us wherever you can. BBC podcasts are supported by advertising.
Deine Katze und du, ihr seid ein starkes Team. Und auch deine Allergie ändert daran nichts. Denn wir von Purina bringen euch wieder näher zusammen. Mit Purina Pro Plan Live Clear, der ersten und einzigen Katzennahrung, die nachweislich Allergene reduziert. Hat alles, was deine Katze braucht und neutralisiert die Allergene auf ihren Haaren und Hautschuppen. Schon ab der dritten Fütterungswoche. Purina Pro Plan Live Clear. Jetzt entdecken. Im Tierbedarf und auf shop.purina.de.
It's Reid Hoffman, co-founder of LinkedIn, investor and co-host of The Possible Podcast. Tune in to hear from Trevor Noah about the future of media and AI, Condoleezza Rice on the intersection of geopolitics and AI, and Bill Gates on what lies ahead with AI and global health, education, and energy. If you, like us, wonder what's possible if we use technology and our collective effort effectively, then subscribe to Possible wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hello and welcome to World Business Report here on the BBC World Service. I'm Rahul Tandon. Plenty coming up on this edition. More problems for VW and Germany.
It would be the first time in Volkswagen's history that they had to close factories on German grounds. Also, the announced there will be 10,000 workers being laid off is quite something.
And we continue our look at the US economy. We're in the swing state of Michigan.
It's about buying groceries, the cost of fuel.
As a person who's went to college and has several degrees, student loan debt is also a very large concern.
I'm just spending money on necessities, you know, and that's not good for the economy.
You can contact us on WhatsApp and send us a voice note, 0044-330-678-3033. We are looking closely at those US elections. We'd love to hear from you. What is driving your vote? Is it economic factors? But we're going to go on a journey now of some of the world's largest economies, and we're going to start here in the UK because it's been a historic day at Westminster.
It is the first budget in our country's history to be delivered by a woman. I am deeply proud to be Britain's first ever female Chancellor of the Exchequer.
Yep, as you heard there, Rachel Reeve, the Chancellor of the Exchequer, the politician who is in charge of the nation's finances, delivering the first budget of this new Labour government. We wanted to look at this in more detail because it's seen as a key moment for the economy. Some have described it as one of the most important budgets for the last 20 years. Let's hear more from the Chancellor, Rachel Reeves.
This is a moment of fundamental choice for Britain. I have made my choices, the responsible choices, to restore stability to our country, to protect working people, more teachers in our schools, more appointments in our NHS, more homes being built, fixing the foundations of our economy, investing in our future, delivering change, rebuilding Britain.
As you heard, there was a lot in that budget. So let's get a sense of the scale of it. Paul Johnson is the director of the Institute for Fiscal Studies.
Well, it's big. 40 billion of tax rises in the so-called in the scorecard is probably as big as we've had since Norman Lamont in 1993. He didn't last very long after that budget. The borrowing increases are also pretty substantial over this period. You know, this is unquestionably a big budget.
So a big budget, we heard that a few times there. But how does it compare to the policies of other European countries? What are they doing at the moment? Here's our very own Rob Watson.
There's a dramatic moment and one that will be watched around the world by developed nations, because that's exactly what is happening, where other large European countries have decided to deal with mounting debts and deficits and low growth by austerity, cutting spending. Britain is doing the absolute opposite. This is a really, really, truly significant increase in taxation, spending and borrowing.
We wanted to get an international perspective from somebody who's had to make these tough financial decisions when you're looking at a country's budget. So here's the former Canadian finance minister, Joe Oliver.
budgets can be transformative depending on what they do about spending, the nature of the spending, and the tax regime that they impose. I mean, look, Arthur Laffer, who's a fairly renowned American economist, said that there are five pillars to prosperity: small government, low taxes, limited regulation, sound money, free trade. If you go in the opposite direction with larger government, higher taxes, greater regulation, and you undermine the soundness of the money by inflation and, you know, reducing the credit, that can have a longer term impact, which is negative for the economy. Canada's last 9 years is a cautionary tale because the government added as much debt in the last 9 years as had been accumulated in the previous 148 years prior to Confederation. It can make a huge difference on the interest obligation. And at the end of the day, on GDP per capita, which is a real measure of individual prosperity.
When you're sitting there and you've been through this and you're looking at lots of different policies and you're wondering about what sort of impact they're going to have, how easy is it to accurately do that?
There's two aspects to spending. One is the quantum and the other is the nature of the spending. And if the spending or the investment, if it relates to long-term infrastructure projects, that will improve productivity and ultimately increase growth and individual prosperity. If the money is devoted primarily to social spending, it can have a short-term impact, but often these programs have to be sustained forever, and they add to the deficits and, of course, to the debt.
Well, that is a really interesting point, isn't it? Because we are seeing many economies, particularly aging economies, which are some of the more higher income economies, having to do that, aren't they? And that is a big problem for them.
Well, yes, it is. And so the solution often is really that governments have less of a revenue problem than they have a spending problem. But the nature of the investment can increase the growth. And some of the policies may appear alluring for political reasons or because there's a short-term economic stimulus, but over the longer term can be quite negative. For example, an increase in the capital gains tax.
To do that now, to balance those books, which many countries are not doing as well as they used to, you either have to decrease spending, which is not popular, or increase revenue, which is getting more from taxes, not popular either. So rather than take those difficult decisions, many governments are just saying, let's just increase the debt instead.
Well, yes, but that's, you know, you can't borrow your way to prosperity. And that's what a lot of governments are doing. But it's not correct that the only way to increase revenue is to increase taxes. The big driver is economic growth. And so you want your policies to enhance growth. Decreasing the tax rate can result in more taxes because there's more economic activity.
Definitely, definitely. But we are not seeing those levels of growth anymore that we used to, are we?
No. And, you know, so that makes it more difficult. But, you know, part of the problem in Europe is the high cost of energy. People are confronting a heat or eat sort of dilemma, which should never be the case in a first world economy. And I think governments have to be careful that they're not wasting vast amounts of money on subsidies for uneconomic renewables and taxing or regulating more productive fuels. I mean, look, part of Germany's problem of deindustrialization, which is also an issue in the UK, is the really catastrophic decision by former Chancellor Angela Merkel to get off nuclear and then coal, and now they're undermined their national security as a result of their dependency on Russian natural gas. But they've increased the cost of energy, and German companies and other European companies have become uncompetitive, and they're moving to the United States. That's a huge issue.
Joe Oliver, then we're going to pick up on that point you made about Germany with our next guest in a minute. But firstly, here's Susan Schmidt, Portfolio Manager at Exchange Capital Resources in Chicago. This was an important budget here in the UK. As the global markets begin to look at it, do you think in the US, which is the home of a lot of money, some of that money might start flowing to the UK now after the budget today?
Well, I think the budget certainly was a big point of uncertainty for the investment community. And investors wanted to see exactly what was going to be noted in that budget. And also now they're going through trying to figure out what businesses will be most impacted, how this is going to impact the economy overall, and what it means. Europe, and particularly the UK, has been a bright spot of strength in overall economies. And investors have certainly been paying attention to that with UK-based businesses. And now with this budget coming in, it adds in a whole new factor. Too soon to say how investors are going to react to it, but I can say that I know a lot of people going through the data right now trying to figure it out.
Well, I'm sure you'll be helping them go through that data. Susan, let us go to Germany now. Because the huge car maker, we keep talking about this, we talked about it a lot this week, Volkswagen has some pretty big problems, and its latest figures are showing that. It's seen a 42% drop in its third quarter profit, the lowest level in 3 years. The German government says it hasn't yet decided on whether it needs to give state aid to VW to prevent those factory closures we talked about earlier in the week. Tensions between the company and its workers were clear in Wolfsburg on Wednesday in remarks made by Thorsten Gröger from the IG Metall Union.
By cancelling the agreement of job security and other contracts, Volkswagen has opened the Pandora's box. It has risked the faith of the employees, and now it is on Volkswagen to regain that trust.
Let's get reaction to that. And also the wider state of the German economy. I've been speaking to Carsten Breske, global head of macro for ING Research.
The fact now is, you know, closing three factories in Germany is unique. It would be the first time in Volkswagen's history that they had to close factories on German grounds. Also, the announcement that there will be a couple of 10,000 workers being laid off is quite something, obviously speaking. Going for zero wage growth for the other employees is also a big bombshell for the entire German economy.
Reflective, many people say, of huge problems within the German economy, but those GDP figures not as bad as expected.
What this GDP growth data masks is that the second quarter was actually revised downwards. So why does this matter? Because now we had minus 0.3% in the second quarter, plus 0.2% in the third quarter. This doesn't make a strong economy. Even worse, where we are at now is even more than 4 years since the start of the pandemic. The German economy hasn't grown. And this shows you that the economy has been in an unprecedented long period of stagnation, and it doesn't look as if it's going to leave this phase of stagnation anytime soon.
There will be worries in Germany because of global factors. We have an election in the US. We don't know who's going to win that. But we know if Donald Trump wins it, there could be more tariffs on German products. And now there is this threat of Chinese retaliation with the EU putting tariffs on Chinese vehicles. And that could really be bad for German car manufacturers.
Indeed, because, you know, whether it is Volkswagen, whether it is the German automotive industry or the entire economy, there are a couple of factors that are cyclical. There are a couple of factors that come from outside Europe, but there are also a couple of factors that are homemade. And the homemade factor is clearly the loss in international competitiveness of the entire German economy. Germany is highly dependent on exports to both the US and China. 10% of German exports go to the US. 6% of German exports go to China. So not even talking about the rising competition coming out of China, just any trade retaliation coming out of China or new tariffs coming out of the US on European goods, and they will include automotives, will hurt an economy like the German one.
Can I put something to you that a former Canadian finance minister said to us a short while ago when he was talking about what he called the sick man of Europe, Germany? He said this was all down to energy policies that have gone wrong, relying on Russia too much, moving away from nuclear energy. Are energy problems still affecting German industry?
That is one side of the equation, and he is right that indeed, you know, 4 years ago, energy prices or supply were not part of the equation for the German economy or German corporates. They simply didn't matter. The other part of the equation, however, is that indeed Germany benefited from cheap energy, but also from freely accessible export markets. So, and also that part of the equation is now somehow no longer working. Either it is trade wars, it is supply chain frictions, or it is a China which has become a system rival. It has become an economy. So China has become an economy that is the better Germany when it comes to manufacturing of industrial goods. It's a different crisis than what we know from the past. This is not a short-lived severe recession. This is a longer-lasting stagnation and a new form of crisis.
Susan, what Carsten saying there that China is in effect a better form of Germany now, that is interesting because many manufacturing countries, traditional ones, are struggling to compete against China, aren't they?
They absolutely are. And I think what we're seeing in Germany here is bringing to light a lot of the issues that manufacturing companies are having. Germany, obviously a big industrial base within Europe and a big part of the European economy. That economy, that German economy with that industrial base has been suffering because the industrial manufacturing base has been under tough competition threat from China. It's forcing investors to look at what's happening with that manufacturing base. How do they get productivity back so they can compete with that lower cost China production?
Yeah, and that is not an easy task for them.
Deine Katze und du, ihr seid ein starkes Team. Und auch deine Allergie ändert daran nichts. Denn wir von Purina bringen euch wieder näher zusammen. Mit Purina Pro Plan Live Clear, der ersten und einzigen Katzennahrung, die nachweislich Allergene reduziert. Hat alles, was deine Katze braucht und neutralisiert die Allergene auf ihren Haaren und Hautschuppen. Schon ab der dritten Fütterungswoche. Purina Pro Plan Live Clear. Jetzt entdecken. Im Tierbedarf und auf shop.purina.de.
It's Reid Hoffman, co-founder of LinkedIn, investor and co-host of The Possible Podcast. Tune in to hear from Trevor Noah about the future of media and AI. Condoleezza Rice on the intersection of geopolitics and AI, and Bill Gates on what lies ahead with AI and global health, education, and energy. If you, like us, wonder what's possible if we use technology and our collective effort effectively, then subscribe to Possible wherever you listen to podcasts.
You are with World Business Report from the BBC World Service. Let us continue our journey around some of the world's largest economies. We're now going to talk about Japan because the Bank of Japan has a big decision to make on interest rates in a few hours' time. Joining me once again on the program is Tobias Harris, founder and principal at the political risk advisory Japan Foresight. This was always going to be a difficult decision. Is it even more difficult now because of the political instability in Japan? It's not clear yet who's going to form the next government, is it, Tobias?
Well, we've certainly got more clarity on the government, but I think the messaging from the BOJ about this meeting, and I think the message has been clear for some time, that we were going to see them hold steady at this meeting. And really the focus now is what happens in December rather than this meeting.
Okay. And just for our listeners, just remind us, Japan has had very low interest rate, negative interest rates, and it's moving away from that era, which is important for the country's economy.
That's right. Earlier this year, the BOJ really made the decision to start moving out of its more unconventional monetary policies, ending yield curve control, ending negative rates, raising rates first in March and then again in July. And so really trying to move rates in a more ordinary direction. Although, as Governor Ueda has been careful to point out, that with inflation, Japan still has negative real rates. And that he believes gives them room to raise again.
We talk a lot about Japan and also its relationship with China. They are Asia's two largest economies. We've had some news coming through that Prime Minister Ishibe is making arrangements to hold talks with the Chinese President Xi Jinping in mid-November when they'll be in South America for international conferences. How significant could that be?
Well, we've seen earlier this summer that there was some real progress made in trying to deal with some trade friction that you've had over China's ban on importing Japanese fisheries. You've had some reestablishment of high-level political exchanges. I think there's a real interest in both Beijing and Tokyo in at least getting the relationship on a little more stable footing. And so to the extent to which a meeting between the leaders gets that on track and keeps that going, even with some of the political turmoil we've seen in Japan, that's an encouraging sign that there might just be more momentum for that to continue.
Tobias, always a pleasure having you on the program. And Susan, we saw earlier this year, didn't we, that Japan still has a central role in the global economy. Problems in Japan led to huge problems on stock markets across the world.
That's right. Don't forget that the yen is still a global currency, and there are a lot of currency hedges that go on between the yen and other currencies. We saw that impact markets significantly over the summer. That's always the case. And again, Japan's market and its economy is very important to the global spectrum.
It certainly is. Let's talk about a couple of companies that are important to the global spectrum. Shall we start with Meta? They've just released third quarter results, and they've done pretty well again, haven't they?
They have, and investors like that part of it. Now, Meta does seem to be doing well. They were able to produce results that were better than market expectations and certainly strongly better than a year ago. So just for example, earnings, $6.03 in earnings per share in this release. That was $4.50 a year ago, so doing quite well. Emphasizing what they're doing with virtual reality technologies, that's where the market and investor focus is, because that's been a very big area of spend for them. Unfortunately, the market isn't receiving that as well, because management commentary this time around indicated that that spend is going to continue to increase as we move through the end of 2024 and into 2025, and that's causing some skepticism from investors.
Talk about a slightly bigger company in terms of Microsoft. Results not too bad, but I'm having a look at the share price dipping in after hours trading?
Dipping just a bit, but opened immediately after the announcement, the market took it quite positively. So trying to sort through this, Microsoft has recently reorganized how they're reporting things. And they're trying to give the markets and investors a better sense of how much AI is impacting their business and what they can do with true cloud-related, AI-related business. We're seeing that in the results. Interestingly, they reported gains in that AI cloud-related business of up about 33%. That's quite a large number. And that compares to Alphabet, Google, which reported on Tuesday night, same segment looking at that AI cloud-related, and theirs was up about 35%. So just an indicator on the growth and strength we continue to see from AI-related businesses.
We talk about it all the time here. Stay with us, Susan, because we're continuing our look at the U.S. economy. We're heading to those swing states. We're today in Michigan, the heartland of America's automotive industry. Michigan is witnessing record employment, and that industry is in pretty good health. Speaking to Michigan Public Radio, these voters say, though, they have many concerns.
It's about buying groceries, the cost of fuel. I live in a small town, so we travel further to buy what we need to buy and to do what we need to do, and it's just, it costs more.
Definitely middle-class folks are like being greatly impacted by healthcare debt. As a person who's went to college and has several degrees, student loan debt is also a very large concern, and not just the loans, the interest on top of that.
I think that if Trump doesn't win, this country is finished. I really believe that. This country is finished because the Democrats will destroy it completely with their socialism programs. I had a lot more money when Trump was in. You know, I've been retired now for 12 years, and I'm not hurting, but I'm also, right now, I'm just spending money on necessities. You know, that's not good for the economy. That hurts businesses.
Susan, any signs of the markets getting jittery before Tuesday?
Well, you're asking that question a little late. We're seeing volatility from the election, and we've been seeing it for, you know, the last 2 months at least. So this is not exactly a new topic in the U.S. and certainly among investors. There's a lot of back and forth as we've learned more about the policies coming from the Harris campaign and what she is actually doing. Remember, those were late to come out because of her late announcement as a candidate. And then again, trying to get details into Trump's economic policies and what's proposed. Investors are still battling that going out, a lot of volatility, and I think a lot of nervousness in the market right up until the election to try and figure out what that means.
Yeah, well, we will be talking to you probably next Wednesday to get some reaction as those results come in. Now, we've been in the big economies, haven't we? The UK, Germany, Japan, the US, the biggest of them all. Let's take you to another one now, India, because it's festive season there for many Hindus. Hundreds of millions of people will be celebrating Diwali on Thursday, and that often leads to an increased demand for gold. But with the price of gold at record highs, is that interest in it falling? Here's Sachin Jain from the World Gold Council.
January to September 2024, the consumption of the demand in India has been 537 tons. And this, you compare to last year in the same period, was about 494 tons. So we've been about 9% up. This year, the performance of gold has been amongst the best in any asset class. And that certainly is a big trigger. And we've just come out of one of the best monsoon seasons that we've seen. And that clearly will reflect on the clear money in the hands of the rural economy and the people that will have a good upsurge on the gold consumption.
Let's get some more thoughts on what's happening with gold shopping in India during the festive period. Our reporter Davina Gupta has been out on the streets of the capital, Delhi, as shoppers head to jewellery shops for gold.
I'm at a jewelry store in central Delhi, and it's the busiest time of the year here. Customers, mostly women, are constantly coming in to purchase gold jewelry. The shelves on the wall have different shapes and sizes of gold necklaces and earrings. The staff here knows that Diwali is when many Hindu households buy gold, so customers won't leave without buying something.
It is very auspicious.
And I saw that you were making a video call to your wife, so, and then showing her all the pieces that are here.
Yes, so purchasing it for the first time.
But the prices are going up. Has it affected your purchase today?
To be honest, if someone wants to buy, they will buy. Price is not a matter.
The collection, the designs they have, pretty unique in the city.
So clearly, this means a lot of business for Mr. Om Prakash, who's the owner of this shop, Panalal Om Prakash Jewelers.
Business is good since the festival season is on. So everyone who has got some money wants to buy something. Some good things, gold, silver, coins, jewelry, whatever.
And with gold prices soaring, have you noticed any change in consumer behavior?
Oh, yeah, there is one phenomena. The phenomena is the prices are ever rising, increase, increment. And that is the one reason why the people want to buy gold and they prefer, because this is anytime cash.
What about competition from online brands that are offering discounts?
Well, online business is okay, but in jewelry line, online doesn't work very much, because whoever wants to buy jewelry will have to see the thing on ice. Then only they decide.
Davina Gupta there, out on the streets of Delhi. Susan Schmidt still with us. And these events, festivals, and other events, it's Halloween, isn't it, in the US tomorrow, can have important impacts on economies. Looking at some figures here, Susan, US Halloween candy spending to surpass $4 billion in 2024.
Yes, lots of candy, lots of sugar. Parents with small children will be quite tired by the end of tomorrow night with all that sugar coursing through them. It's a big event. And holidays, remember, can be big impacts to the economy when you have events like this, whether it's Diwali. We have the holidays shopping season around Christmas happening. Mm. Chinese New Year is another one. Even things like Taylor Swift concerts have been shown to have measurable impacts on the economic activity as they happen. And so all things to note when you're looking at economic activity and trying to estimate GDP and business health around those times.
Yeah, don't talk about Taylor Swift. Had a big economic impact on my household, I can tell you. I'm looking at some numbers here. American households will spend $31 on average on Halloween candy. 15 seconds for you, Susan. Are you spending $31 on candy for Halloween?
Well, I live in an apartment building, so we get to share the burden, and I think we do a bit less. But I do know many households who will be on standalone houses entertaining goblins, ghosts, and witches, and who will be spending much more than that.
Susan, as always, thank you so much for joining us on the program. That is it for this edition of World Business Report.
Deine Katze und du, ihr seid ein starkes Team. Und auch deine Allergie ändert daran nichts. Denn wir von Purina bringen euch wieder näher zusammen. Mit Purina Pro Plan Live Clear, der ersten und einzigen Katzennahrung, die nachweislich Allergene reduziert. hat alles, was deine Katze braucht und neutralisiert die Allergene auf ihren Haaren und Hautschuppen. Schon ab der dritten Fütterungswoche. Purina Pro Plan Live Clear. Jetzt entdecken. Im Tierbedarf und auf shop.purina.de.
The race to become the next president of the United States is on.
We can't drop the pace now.
Yeah, it's pretty close.
Count on the BBC World Service to keep you informed on the latest breaking news, with insight and analysis you can trust.
Immigration, if you look at polls, a top concern for so many U.S. voters.
The issue of the economy reigns supreme for everybody.
For a global perspective on the U.S. election, search for The Global Story, The Documentary, and The Global News Podcast, wherever you get your BBC podcasts.